What's up, everyone? It is Friday, June 16th. Happy Friday. Happy start to a long weekend. Monday is Juneteenth, federal holiday, so hope everyone has a great three-day weekend. And welcome to another episode of the New York Sports Minute. I apologize. I've been rolling out an episode every Friday, but last week was one of the first weeks where I actually missed an episode. I apologize about that. I promise I will get in the routine of having one of these every week. But very excited for this week's content. We have a lot going on in the New York sports world and the sports world in general. We had the Mets playing the Yankees in the Subway Series, where both teams didn't really look so good. The Mets have their issues. The Yankees, without Aaron Judge, are really struggling to generate their offense. So both teams and both fan bases are not very excited about where these teams are. But we have about 90 games left, so I think we'll be all right. We had the NHL playoffs wrap up last weekend, where the Las Vegas Knights took home their first Stanley Cup trophy, so it's great to see them do that. And then, of course, earlier this week, the Denver Nuggets and Nikola Jokic won the NBA Finals. The Joker is the king of the NBA universe. People have been talking about him all week, about his nonchalant attitude, how cool he is, how he's going to go back to Serbia and race horses. So that's top of mind. But with the NBA playoffs finishing up, I've had a lot of people ask me, all right, what's going on with the Knicks? What's the NBA offseason going to look like for the Knicks and for the Nets and here in New York City? And so, perfect timing, because this week, in this week's episode, I sat down with probably the best Knicks content creator out there. I sat down with Jonathan Macri, who runs Knicks Film School, which is an awesome podcast. He runs a blog. He appears on SNY. He is a brilliant mind when it comes to all New York Knicks, and he's very in touch with what's going on in the organization. And so him and I sat down. We talked about the Knicks season. We talked about their offseason. He gave me his perspective on what the Knicks should do with Julius Randle and RJ Barrett. And we also got into how Jonathan really started this and how he's been sort of balancing jobs and creating content and now being one of the true voices for the Knicks fan base and for the Knicks franchise. And so it's an awesome episode. If this is your first time listening to my episodes, I drop an episode every Friday. Listen and subscribe on all of your usual podcast networks. And without further ado, let's get into the interview with Jonathan Macri. This is the New York Sports Minute with your host, Morgan Eck. All right, very excited to welcome on the show, host of Knicks Film School, probably the smartest New York Knicks mind we have, and that is the legend, the man, the myth, Jonathan Macri. John, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
I'm good. I'm not, man. If I'm the smartest of anything, that's a sad indictment or whatever that population is. But I'll take the compliment. Sure, why not?
Hey, man, well, you've been a fun follow. You're someone who covers the Knicks religiously. You're also a diehard fan. And so I figured you and I have been going back and forth throughout the season. That'd be great to have you on to talk about the Knicks, talk about the offseason, talk about what fans can expect over the next 6 months. So I'm pumped. I'm pumped to get into it with you and talk everything blue and orange.
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome, man. So we're in the offseason, but I want to get your take. I feel like there isn't really an offseason in the NBA anymore. Like, the Nuggets have now been crowned champions, and a day later, we're now talking about Zion Williamson and where he's going to go. So as someone who's been covering the Knicks for a while, is there really an offseason? Are you really not as busy as you are now, or you still feel like it's just craziness out there?
I mean, just speaking from like what I do, I mean, no, having no post games is definitely, you know, it lessens my load because that's a bear. But like, in terms of the time that I'll spend like thinking about the team and the league, like that hasn't changed. I mean, really, the NBA offseason, I feel like, is from like mid July to you know, late September. But no, we're there. It's not an offseason right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd be curious, like, in the years past, we've had a lot of turmoil here in the Knicks, but compared to the rest of the league, this is actually a pretty stable offseason that we're heading into, right? We have an owner who's been pretty quiet. Yeah. We have a person making decisions, Leon Rose, who's been here for a few years. He's going to be here at least for the foreseeable future. We have our cornerstone piece, Mr. Brunson, who everyone's in love with. Obviously, a lot can change, but is this the most stable offseason we've had in a while? Like, how are you thinking about it?
Yeah, I guess from, sure, to some extent. But then again, you know, I'm thinking back to Leon's first offseason when he had just taken the job in March. And like, you know, I mean, he hired a coach. So you want to say that that meant like less stability or, but it's laying the foundation. So that's, mm-hmm. that's kind of like, I almost don't even count that offseason, but I don't know. I've spent a lot of time over the last few weeks thinking about how aggressive they will be this summer. And the only thing that I think I believe 100% is that they will not return the exact same rotation as they ended the year with. I think they will do something. And I think, you know, I mean, obviously there's been a lot of talk recently about the new CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, mm-hmm. and the different ways that teams are planning for the institution of that and how teams will be reacting to that. And you know, the value of contracts, the value of max contracts, the value of mid-tier contracts, you know, and the players that they're attached to. I mean, it is really kind of like a Brave New World. And I don't know. I think teams, like, I don't say that nobody knows what to make of it, because I'm sure they do know what to make of it, but I don't think that we're quite fully prepared for how this offseason might unfold. And that if you're a team like the Knicks and there's an opportunity to get better on the court, you know, and they, I think they do want to get better on the court. And I think they'll be in the market for guys who will make them better. It's going to be really interesting to see the calculation as far as, you know, contracts they might be willing to take on, or, you know, like young players they might be willing to send out, and those sorts of things. So like, I, this is a very long-winded way of saying I'm kind of prepared for anything. Mm-hmm. You could tell me like all five starters will be back. You could tell me that they will trade two starters, you know, and nothing would really shock me.
I agree. I mean, I would say the one thing we know is that Leon Rose traditionally is a more conservative guy. Like, the moves he makes on draft night are for future picks. The contracts he gives out, I would generally say, are safer, even though you could argue Fournier's was not the safest contract in the world. But, you know, overall, he's a more conservative guy. But we're not going to predict what Leon's going to do. But I would say Jonathan Macri was Leon Rose. Say you were in charge.
Sure.
I feel like in Knicks camp, there's sort of like the red pill and the blue pill. Yeah. Blue pill is, hey, we're on the right track. We have our star guy. Julius was third team all pro. You know, incremental changes, and this team could get lucky, like the Heat, and all of a sudden be in the finals next year. But then there's the red pill, which is, oh, Julius averaged, you know, 8 points a night in the playoffs. We know that if this team wants to become a Jokic and Murray, we're going to need another player here. Like, if you are making the decisions, which kind of pill are you leaning towards?
I guess if you put it like that, I guess I'm the purple pill guy, because I don't think this is a contending roster. And I don't think it's going to be a contending roster in a year or 2 years or 3 years. And you know, the Emmanuel Quickleys and Obi Toppins and Quentin Grimes of the world are, not to say nothing of the Jalen Brunsons and Julius Randles of the world, are going to get more expensive. And once those guys get more expensive, and again, it's kind of like referring back to the new CBA, like, they will be harder to trade potentially. Well, easier to trade in that it's kind of easier to trade bigger contracts and smaller contracts, right, in the league, but like, you know what I mean? Their value will perhaps be different, right. But I also am not like, I do think that what we saw this year was real. And I think what this team is real. I think Julius had a horrible playoffs, but he was injured. So like, you take it with a grain of salt. And I don't, you know, I do agree that Brunson is a star, but I think that they're a big move away. And I don't know if that big move is going to be available to them this summer, but I do think like, there does need to be a sense of urgency. Again, maybe not this summer, but you know, within the next 2 years, for me, the date that I have circled is, which might seem crazy because it's so far off, but is July, like whatever the day ends up being, July 1st, June 30th of 2025, because that's when Brunson's going to, he'll opt out of the last year of his contract. He's going to get a new contract. It's probably going to be a max. If Julius is here or whoever they trade Julius for, like that player might be due a new contract then. So like this team's going to get very expensive. It's going to be much harder for them to maneuver if they keep even a semblance of this current core. So like they have 2 years, I think, in my opinion, just my two cents to make whatever big move or moves they're going to make to try to vault them from pretender status to contender status.
Yeah. And when I look at kind of where that big move can go, I always sort of look at what's the alternative, right? Meaning like number, you know, you're not going to touch the point guard position. You have your big move there. I think a lot of people will clamor for a legitimate two guard scoring option with Jalen. But if that person comes in, what does that mean for Quickley and for Grimes, who are going to be looking for legitimate minutes and the opportunity to grow into that position? So you're basically giving up or potentially giving up on those two. And I think at the five, you just invested in a young center who had a really good series against Cleveland, who has grown year over year, who has shown he's very athletic and keep up with legitimate big men in the league. And so to me, it's sort of the RJ Randall conversation. Like if you want to make that move, it probably will come at the expense of one of those, maybe. So I'd be curious, like when you think about the big move, is there a part of the team that you think is the area they have to upgrade? Is it a position or maybe it's a player that you're kind of thinking through?
Yeah, I mean, I know they kind of reinvented the wheel this year, maybe not by choice, but I think they looked at where they were and they kind of did it out of necessity and as the most efficient means to an end, which was, okay, we don't have great shooting, so how are we going to generate effective offense? Well, we're going to literally do everything else that we could do. And they did it really well. They didn't turn the ball over. They got to the free throw line. And most prominently, they offensive rebounded the hell out of the ball. And they just were relentless in attacking the paint. And that worked during the regular season. And like, I'm not going to say it didn't work in the playoffs, but like they're, you know, I think they're that we saw the limitations of that approach. And I just like, I know the Denver Nuggets did not shoot the ball well in the finals. But I do think they need more offensive skill. And obviously the most prominent offensive skill is shooting. So like, whatever you want to call that, shooting, offensive skill, whatever, they need more of that. And to me, and Fred Katz has been on this point, you know, from The Athletic, who's great. And I just talked to him last night about this. He wrote an article about it this offseason. I wrote an article about it this offseason. RJ and Randall, first of all, there's no indication that they elevate each other's games. And if anything, the opposite is true. And one guy has now been in the league for how I don't know, 8 years, the other guy 4 years. Like I don't foresee either of them ever becoming high-level shooters. And like I'm not gonna say that they're not skilled. Julius Randle's incredibly skilled and RJ has some skills, but like there's kind of like a lack of finesse with those guys. And like I do see there being a necessity to pivot from one of those two, to say nothing of the fact that Randall and Barrett, I don't believe, are plus defenders. I know Barrett had a better defensive performance in the playoffs, but I'm probably lower on his long-term defense than most people. So like, I think there's something there. That said, I don't think the conversation this summer is RJ or Randall. I think it's going to be more RJ or Quickley. I would actually be mildly surprised if both of those guys were back next year. And Quickley is the guy in particular that I kind of have my eye on as does he get moved this summer? And we don't have to go through all the reasons, but like, you know, I just wonder if he wouldn't have more value to another team than he would have to the Knicks. And I mean that specifically in the sense of, is there a team out there who looks at him as a potential starting point guard, as like a guy who could be a top three option, starting option, play 35 minutes a night, you know, and that would probably be alongside, you know, a high volume scoring wing or multiple scoring wings, such that like, yeah, he's the nominal point guard, but he doesn't have to generate in the traditional sense, the offense. Because to me, that's a guy, if you're making that bet, that's a guy that you pay $25 million a year, which is what I think he's going to be looking for. And if you're the Knicks, again, I keep referencing it with the new CBA, I just don't know. I don't know that they're going to be so quick to pay him what he wants when it is very clear what his role is here, and more, perhaps more importantly, what his role is never going to be, which is it's not ever going to be the starting point guard for as long as Jalen Brunson's here. So those are, I kind of have my eye on RJ quickly is like, do one of those two guys get moved this summer?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I also think from the quickly side too, stating the obvious, what could he do to make his value even higher at this point? Like, he was potential sixth man of the year. People don't talk enough about how amazing he was defensively all season.
He was awesome.
He played, when he played more than 30 minutes, he showed amazing performances like he did against Boston when he scored 40 plus points. Like, at a certain point, what more are you going to ask for from the guy? And so I think if they're going to sell high on someone like IQ, it's probably right now over the next 2 months as a, you know, low money, high performer, high potential upside, frees up that second piece next to Jalen Brunson. So it makes a lot of sense. I would hate as a fan to see him go, because I think he's probably one of the first, you know, one of the first, but one of the homegrown guys. You know, you hate getting rid of these homegrown guys. And they've done a good job of keeping them with RJ and with Mitch, but it is a good point. So you would say you think Randall's on the team day one next year?
Right now, I would be shocked if he wasn't. Who the hell knows? Crazier things have happened, but that's just me personally. I'd be really surprised if he wasn't there.
I agree. I think also we forget third team all NBA don't grow on trees. And the fact that if you could potentially have it, so he's your third option, would be, that is the recipe that I think could elevate them to this next level. But I guess we'll see. Couple other questions I just want to get your thoughts on real quick.
Yeah, sure.
Is Josh Hart, do you see that? I see that as potential one of those free agency starts, and he's right back. I think he's kind of said it on his podcast that he loves being here. He loves the Jalen Brunson connection. He loves kind of the Villanova community seemingly in New York. Do you think he's back? Do you have any hesitation? Like, I mean, you never know, but do you feel that he's going to be a kind of a long-term piece for these guys moving forward?
Oh, I'd be utterly shocked if he wasn't here. I think they're going to pay him. He's going to be here. They love him. He's a Tibbs guy. He seems to has the qualities that they espouse as an organization. So yeah, he'll be back.
Yeah. I mean, he's a player that I think has greatly changed this team's identity. And it was just when he wasn't playing, we showed how much this team suffered. So I'd be shocked if he wasn't back. He's also asking for what I think was like $18 million, which I know sounds like a lot, but when you look at who's getting paid that, it's not crazy. It's not crazy what he's asking for, or supposedly what he's asking for. I think Jonathan Isaac makes $18 million a year. So he's not asking for a super max paycheck. So if they can get him for what he's asking for, I think it'd be a no brainer.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say very quickly, like, again, to me, one of the fascinating things with the new CBA is like a guy who does have, here's the thing about Josh Hart, he does have a deficiency, and we saw that deficiency play out in the playoffs, and that he is not a guy who, if a team leaves him open from behind the arc, he's just not going to fire away. Like, there is that hesitation there, and that really hurt them, I think, in the series against Miami. So it's like, what do you pay role players now with this, in this new cap environment, who, like, they're definitively role players and they are really high level role players in mm-hmm. several areas, and he is without question, but do have kind of a fundamental thing that they either don't do or don't do well that will rear its head in the postseason? I mean, I think he's going to get his money. I'm happy to pay him his money, but it's like, I don't know. How is that contract going to age is going to be something that I'll be curious to watch also.
Yeah. I would not want to be an agent for a role player whose like key attributes are chemistry, is motor, is like, he's not shooting 40% from three, and you can equal that to everyone else who's shooting 40% from three, right? There's a lot of things he does off the court that you probably can't quantify. So yeah, I mean, he could get a wide range of money and I wouldn't be surprised, right? Depending on who his agent is.
He'll get paid.
And he's a great part of this team. I'm a Nova guy. I went to Nova and he electrified kind of this, you know, this fan base when he came on and they won all those games in a row. But other quick question, just very quickly, Obi last year, similar spot as quickly, probably one of the more frustrating experiences we've had. He's shown moments where like, holy crap, this guy is going to take that step. Other moments where you kind of shake your head. What is your final stance on him? Like, do you think he's part of the long-term plans, or do you think kind of with the CBA stuff, he could be a part of a potential move him around for something else type thing?
I mean, of every player currently on the roster, he's the one that I would be most surprised if he's on the team next year. I think they're going to move him this summer. I don't know what they're going to move him for, but like, he's extension eligible. It is very clear that like, he is definitively a backup at one position and the guy that's ahead of him plays 35 minutes a night. You know, that is not going to change. So, you know, he's not going to accept, like, if they were even to offer him an extension, which I don't even know if they are, like the value of that player of like a 14 minute a night backup at that position is not going to generate the sort of contract offer that I'm sure he is going to be looking for. And by the way, he shouldn't sign that contract offer. Again, this is all me assuming, but he shouldn't sign that sort of contract offer because he has had moments over the last 3 years where he has looked like a guy that, hey, if he could get 25, 30 minutes a night somewhere else, to say nothing of in a situation that maybe is better at exploiting his talents, he could be making a lot more money. The only thing I want to say with Obi is I do think that there is this level of fascination with him and this assumption that, like, oh, if he was with a team that knew how to use him, like,
right.
Guys are going to great basketball players will succeed. They will figure out a way to succeed. They will force their coach's hand. They will show themselves to be what they are. And I do get a little annoyed sometimes where it's like, oh, this is clearly a guy who would be a, you know, X, Y, or Z on another team and under a different coach. Like, guys are usually what they are, you know, and they show themselves to be that. So, like, I think Obi's good. I think he has some talent. I think he's a rotation player in this league, but I don't get the sense that he's going to go somewhere else and like turn into this to this all-star level player. I think he has some real deficiencies as a player that have shown themselves here. And there's a reason why, like, you know, he doesn't get a ton more time, I think.
Yeah. But that's, I agree. Me. And plus it's like, it's not like he hasn't been given opportunities, right? I mean, Julius Randle missed a large portion of the NBA playoffs where Tibbs asked Obi to be the starting four on this team, right? Like, he had his opportunities to show himself. And I think,
and he had some moments, like, yeah, his stretch at the beginning of the third quarter in, what was it? The game where Randle got injured, against Cleveland. I think it was game five.
Yeah.
Like, he was awesome. Like, Obi helped them win that game. I don't know if they win that game without him. So, like, he's had moments, but he's also had other moments that, you know, have not been great. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Two more quick hitters in the Knicks, then we'll transition for a couple minutes.
Sure.
Which former Knick is more likely to be on this roster day one? Kristaps Porzingis or Ryan Arcidiacono?
Archie Diacono. I would have said Porzingis a few weeks ago, but one of my rules as a Knick fan is always trust Ian Begley, the great Ian Begley of SNY. And he came on my pod, you know, a couple weeks ago, and he wrote as much as well, but he kind of said he doesn't see them looking at in KP's direction. And now we had a kind of a report from Keith Smith, who does great work for SpotTrack, today, indicating that Porzingis was probably going to opt in to the final, potentially going to opt into his player option, which kind of indicates to me that maybe the market that he thought might have been out there is not out there. Now, does that make him the Knicks more likely to go after him? I don't know. I could see the logic to that, but I would say Arcidiacono.
I never got why. I know Archie has bounced around, but talk about a chemistry builder. Best friends with Jalen and Josh, right? Comfortable is that last role. I mean, what else are you going to do with your 12th man? Come on.
They'll figure out a way to bring him back.
He's a legend. He's a staple of this team. We need him back. Like I said, as a Nova guy, I need more Nova people on this team, the better. Eventually, when Tibbs retires and we get Jay Wright, we'll just bring the whole band back together.
There you go.
Is Fred VanVleet any chance there, you think, or no? No chance, right? I know we've had tabs him over the years. I don't know how him and Jalen would ever play together, but I thought that was an interesting opt out in that someone will be very excited to sign Fred VanVleet.
Yeah, I mean, look, small guard, gonna be 30 next year, I think, or this summer even maybe. Getting a lot of money. So I like the guy we have. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I agree. Well, listen, man, I think, like you said, it's an off season where anything can happen. We could have the same team coming next year. We could have Joel Embiid as our center next year. And I wouldn't be surprised. Like, anything could truly happen. I would say, though, as a Knicks fan in general, you have to be as confident as you've been a long time on the foundation we now have. And I think, more importantly, kind of seeing Jalen sprout into this potential all NBA guy was probably one of the highlights for me, at least seeing we have truly our guy that I think kind of balled out even in game six in that loss. So it's pretty exciting time to be a Knicks fan, at least I'd say.
Yeah, for sure.
Last thing I want to get into before I let you go, it's been great chatting with you, John, is you've been covering this team now for how long? Informally, I guess.
Oh my God. I mean, I think my first like blog post about them posted, Jesus Christ, I'm going back 7 years ago, maybe, where it's essentially like a real, like a full-time thing for me. I mean, probably 4 or 5 years.
And you would be curious, like, what was that transition like from you when you posted that first blog 7 years ago? I always love just hearing these stories about, you know, people who do these things. It's a lot of work, right? Like the amount of time you put in every night after these games is a lot of work. Like, what was that transition like for you when you started to kind of dabble into the content?
It wasn't a transition at all at first, because like I thought about the team all the time. And I mean, I've told the story a bunch of times. I'll say it briefly, like I switched jobs. And as a result of that, I had 2 hours to kill on the train every day. And I wanted to fill that time with something that I enjoyed doing. So I'd always kind of written here and there, and I enjoy writing. So I'm like, I'm gonna write about the thing that I love the most, which is basketball. And it kind of grew from there. And like, it was an outlet for me to like, you know, figure out my own thought process when it came to the team and the league. And so for years, I don't think it changed anything until like the last couple years, when doing a post game after every game. And then those post games went from 5-10 minutes to now, like, they're usually like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then writing about the team, and then kind of interact, like, we have a great fan community at KFS, and like interacting with them and in many different mediums. So over the last few years, I've needed to kind of, for one, unplug when I'm not actively engaged in doing it, and just like not think about the team, because otherwise it just becomes too much. And I think, like, for me, I've slowly but gradually needed to, I don't want to say take the emotion out of it, because like I'm still like, trust me, when I sit down and watch a game, I still like root like crazy, and that hasn't
still
changed.
Diehard. But
yeah, but when the Knicks used to lose a game, I used to have trouble falling asleep at night. Like, I need, from a self-preservation standpoint, I needed to figure out a way to change that, because otherwise I just wasn't going to be able to sustain what I do with just how much I engage with this team and all the different ways that I engage with it. So I think that part has changed, and like, it does kind of make it difficult when occasionally, you know, I'm talking to fans or writing with, you know, back and forth with fans or whatever, other fans, and fandom is short for fanatic. It is implicit that there is passion involved here, and passion is not always rational. In fact, it is often irrational. So I have to remember that and catch myself, so that even though I have kind of transitioned into more of like I try to take the emotion out of it, again, because I need to, that's not the case for a lot of people. So that's created in kind of an interesting dichotomy for me over the last few years, but you know, it's all part of the process, as they say.
Yeah, it's like you're going through the and it's a wonderful life. Like, you're now living above the bodies, right? Like, you're trying to watch the games, right?
I don't know about that. Totally, but no, I'm just a fan. I write about the team and talk about them more than other people.
What was the, and I know you got to go in a second, but you know, for fans who haven't heard John, he leads Knicks Film School, which is an awesome podcast. They release a ton of content almost more than once a week. You guys are pretty daily at this point when the season's hot, but they do great live reactions. You were on SNY a couple of times this season, I think I saw you. So you were kind of all over the place. What was sort of that one moment where it kind of exploded for you though? Was there a moment where you went from writing the blog on the train to like, oh wow, like this is an investment for me and probably my family, because you're committing so much time to it? Like, what was that moment, or maybe moments, like for you?
Yeah, I'll say two moments. One is, I forget which of these two happened first, but so as anybody who listens to the show knows, like Zach Lowe, so everybody who covers the NBA, like Zach Lowe is like my North Star. He's the guy that when I first started writing, I tried to emulate. Yeah. And
your white whale.
Yeah, I think he's his analysis is still top notch. So like, I still remember when he followed me on Twitter. That was a I remember that was like a huge deal for me. And then eventually I got to have him on the pod, which was even more fun. So that was really cool and like validating. And then when I had been writing the newsletter for about maybe 2 years, year and a half, 2 years, whatever it was. And then I decided to make it subscription-based and like ask people to pay for my content. And before I did that, like I was grappling with that decision for really a long time. And I was like, I could do this. And there could be, you know, 10 people that are like, yeah, right. I'll, you know, and half of those people would be like close family and friends. And then, but then the response when I actually went paid was more than I could have ever anticipated. And, you know, that, I think that for me was the moment where I was like, okay, this is actually, I officially can say this is how I make my living now, even though I still, you know, do other stuff. So, yeah.
That's pretty cool, man. No, I still remember listening to that low podcast. I think you still have it pinned as one of your top Twitter.
It is my pinned tweet. Right? I think it'll probably always be my pinned tweet. That was,
it's
that
like,
was a throw.
It's like your trophy, right? It's your trophy in the top shelf. Like, hey, this is my validation moment, right? This is
it was my now I could die in peace. Yeah.
Who's your new person? Now you got him. Who's like the next person you need to have on your show or sit down with? Is there someone in mind besides
There's
me?
Only one person that I've said this, it's been the same answer ever since I was doing this. Pat Riley. And I'll never get him because like people who cover the NBA full time, like can't get Pat, like top national writers can't get a sit down with Pat Riley. So he's not going to talk to me. But like, if you're asking me who my dream guest would be, without question, it'd be Pat Riley.
Oh my God. Talk about the butterfly effect. We could spend a whole podcast talking about the what ifs of Pat Riley staying in New York versus going to Miami. And if you haven't read the book, Blood in the Garden.
Oh, Blood
really
in the
good book.
It's awesome. I'm sure the Knicks would come up, but like that dude's seen and heard and been responsible for more of the biggest events in NBA history, I would argue, than anybody, probably, because you know, he obviously was a player for the Lakers back in the 70s and his career since then. And it's just been, I would just want to sit and listen to him tell stories. That he's maybe never said anywhere else. That would be so cool.
Well, as a fan, I'll be watching. Hopefully one of these days I see a emergency episode interview with Pat Riley, right? You know,
yeah,
something
right.
like that.
Don't hold your breath.
But hey, one step at a time. Well, listen, John, I appreciate you coming on. I know you got to get back to your to everything else you're working on. So I appreciate you coming on. How can fans find you, listen to you? What's the best way for folks to give you a follow?
I mean, I'm not really that active on Twitter anymore. Again, one of the benefits to Knicks Film School kind of becoming pretty big is I don't have to promote myself on Twitter as much as I used to. Follow me on Twitter at JC Macri MBA. And then everything is under the Knicks Film School umbrella. So Knicks Film School, my newsletter on Substack, Knicks Film School podcast, Knicks Film School YouTube channel. If you want to become a patron of Knicks Film School, we have Patreon, which has been a really wonderful community, and that's been a great experience too. So just KFS across the board, but I appreciate you having me on, and this was fun.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks, Sean. Jonathan Macri, great meeting you. Great having you on. Go Knicks. And listen, when we get Joel Embiid and Dame Lillard, we can have you on again or something.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Sean. There you have it, folks. Was great meeting Jonathan and having him on the show. Like he said, like I was saying, I think this could be a pretty wild offseason for the Knicks. The Knicks have to decide, is this the team that is capable of winning the finals? Is Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle, and RJ Barrett enough? My gut says it probably isn't. And to Jonathan's point, I think they're going to need one more player if they truly want to elevate themselves to the top echelon of the NBA. And so it's going to be a busy next few weeks. Free agency starts in just a couple weeks in July. Watch out for guys like RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, a couple others. It's going to be a crazy offseason. And so with that, hope everyone has a great long weekend. We are now in the doldrums of the summer sports months, and so it's all going to be Yankees and Mets moving forward, even though we do have some great U.S. Open golf this weekend. But hope everyone has a great weekend, and we will see you guys this time next week. See ya.